Okay, you're very welcome back to the second hour of the 9 till noon show. Good morning. If you've just joined us, you missed a really interesting conversation, I think, between Michael McLaughlin, branch secretary of the Donegal Labour Party, Dr. Kieran O'Farrell, who's a general practitioner, of course, and Grainne Hines, member of Letterkenny Active Retirement. Okay, your comments coming in this morning. Yes, there is climate change. The biggest problem is pollution. Sort that first. The rest will follow, believes a listener. Another person totally unaware of the environmental damage of industrial wind turbines, and a doctor to boot, a bit of research would go a long way. Read an industrial wind plant planning application. I suggest we were talking about offshore. Does your view, or does your does that include offshore as well? Because I think that's what they were talking about. Greg, maybe we could complement the allopathic doctors that are government funded with holistic doctors who provide a wonderful medical service. What I can see, present doctors treat symptoms, not the root cause. Just throw your medication, but don't look to see why you have issues. Never mention diet or nutrition, which usually is the root cause of most cases. Good morning, Greg. Grainne talks about morality. Where was the morality during COVID? She had no problem leaving healthy, unvaccinated people out in the cold and rain. Talk about hypocrisy. These people need to listen back to themselves. I'm not sure what role Grainne had in that, but anyway. The Labour Party says this listener did very little when in power across the board, especially in health, housing, and helped bring in some of the worst cuts to social welfare, pensions and young people. It still has not been forgotten by all. That's why they are where they are. We have enough false promises. Another problem with doctors and nurses, a Garda, etc., is that they are leaving their country by the thousands. We're losing people we've trained and those who we could train. This again is government failure, believes Martin. GPs and doctors have saved my life a few times, says a listener. I have high respect for them, but they are poorly managed in a poor system. Many nurses are trained to do some of their work, but are not allowed to do so as to allow them to concentrate on more skilled clinical medical areas of healthcare work. Another, we have two GP practices in the same publicly funded building with two admins, differing systems and different GPs. Why in such a small town? We also need to look at how GPs are working. There needs to be a root and branch person-centred review of all services, ground up, top down in GP, community health, social services and nearly every area of government civil service, especially the judiciary. But who will do it and who has the power to implement it, which is a powerful question too. A caller says the elephant in the room is mass immigration following the results of polls that showed that 75% of Irish people think Ireland has taken in too many asylum seekers. It's time to have the referendum. To what end? Do you believe the referendum would be worded in, like, no more, send everyone home? Like, what referendum are you talking of? We are seeing half as many asylum seekers now as we were. Is that progress? Is that what you want? It's questions, not statements here. It's not nurses, says this listener, we have a problem with. It's the staff behind the counter who are acting like they are all doctors. But I presume that role has been delegated to them, no? Another, I feel the issue with GPs is often getting past the secretary. Surely she is there to only answer the phone, and either a nurse or doctor should call back. All too often, it's this person who makes a medical decision on whether you should see the GP. Is that the case, or do they run that information past a higher up in terms of medical experience? I'm not sure the secretaries, as you describe them, are doing all that triage work, are they? Morning, Greg. In relation to Ireland's ladies yesterday and the game, great game, and we're all proud of this team, but I have one disappointment, Amber Barrett not getting on the pitch. It's nothing to do with Amber being from Donegal. It is that she is so deserving of her place. Let's not forget her goal that got us there, her two goals in the friendly, and great goals they were. At a goal down and needing at least a draw with the amount of possession we had in the last 15 minutes, I think Amber would have put the ball over the line. Heard someone on the Tonight Show being asked what would the team need to do in the next game, and his answer was Amber Barrett needs to start, so it's not just me. I mean, I can't separate my sort of parochial views with, you know, other views. Obviously, we'd love to see Amber on and Kira on as well. It did. I thought it was peculiar, proven a goal scorer, not putting them on when we needed a goal. But I don't know enough to know whether or not the people that did come on in the overall strategy of the game, what they brought to it. So I don't have that information, if the truth be told. I thought it was a really good Irish performance. I thought it proved that we can take on the best in the world, and we'll need to when we take on Canada next. But we looked really good when taking them on and attacking, I think. And we did go into that game sort of with a negative approach. That was what the plan was. But when we were going forward, that's when I thought we looked really well. So it'll be interesting to see what happens next Wednesday. Again, we need something out of the game with Canada. That's just a reality. A win would just be superb. But a draw, depending on other results, and a win against Nigeria could be enough too. But I'm really proud of that performance yesterday. No doubt about that. And really sickened to see the negativity towards the penalty and the naming and singling out. You know, there's lots of different variables that lead to different things in the game, and I don't think there's any great benefits on that. Did you try and get your Taylor Swift tickets yesterday? This caller says, my two daughters were left devastated. €206 to €744 for tickets. How in this world is a parent supposed to be able to afford any of this? It's crazy. I mean, there was a system employed whereby people were waiting for ages in a queue, and by the time they got to the end of that queue, there were packages available, €704, €744, €500. The amount of pressure on parents to deliver for their children as well, and I get that, but that whole concert system between hotels and the price of tickets, absolutely crazy and so unattainable for so many people, and a lot of disappointed people this morning, and their parents too, no doubt. What was your experience of trying to get Taylor Swift tickets? What needs to change? Or maybe you were lucky enough to get them, and hey, brilliant for you too, and you've got something to look forward to. And if you got them and you got them at a decent price, don't feel guilty about that either. Right, so let us know, Taylor Swift, did you get the tickets? Are you as excited? What does it mean? Did you not get them? What was the experience like? What do you think needs to change? Get your views into us. A caller says there are 200 million cattle in India and a total of 9 million here. So he's saying we are all the problem. Another, wind turbines are inefficient, have a relatively short lifespan, involving huge levels of pollution, both in manufacturing and disposal, and are eyesores, damaging tourism. Without the PSO levy, wind power would not work as a business model. Tidal power, more efficient, less pollution, not an eyesore, not damaging to tourism. Also, CO2 makes up 0.044% of the atmosphere. If it drops below 0.04, crops will fail. That's more terrifying. Unfortunately, Greg, says another listener, there are still people who do not believe in climate change. Ireland is like the caveman of Europe and will never have a circular economy. It's so backward here. People won't give up their big Jeeps and convenience. Well, there is talk now of increasing tax on SUVs. As I said yesterday, it's to plug the gap in the finances that people switching to electric have created. That's not to blame them. You know what I mean? Would you welcome that? We have all poisoned our own flora and fauna through big deals with weed killer companies, believes another listener. This is like COVID, another scam. That's what the people truly think. That's as it relates to climate change. What's the motivation? Do you believe it is a scam? But tell me why. Come on, talk about it. That's fine. We can have a debate on that too. Right, okay. Canada, America, Asian countries are using weather notification or modifications, all published. Do people ever stop to think what damage that is doing to Ireland? So stop farming or driving is not realistic. Another, how much carbon do we produce in the world compared to other countries? Tell us now, please. You see, it's judged by per head of population, and we are really quite high. Are you talking about the island of Ireland as a total, or are you on about per head of population? Because we are above China, if I'm not mistaken. Good morning, Greg. Talk about weak men on the panel today. Where have the real men in Ireland gone? These people are afraid of their own shadows. No wonder Ireland is in the state it is in. I don't know what that means or what that texter is doing to address that issue that they see there. I see a lot of this talk about men of Ireland and the real men of Ireland standing up, and it's normally screaming in people's faces with a mobile phone, and that's about the height of it. But anyway, Aoife McNichol is a barrister from Gortahawk and is back on the show with us today. Hi, Aoife. Thank you for joining us again.
How you doing, Greg? I've gone old school today with a landline.
Hey, you can't be old school, can you? Listen, it's great to have you back on the show. Right, okay, so we talked, we got most of what we were saying yesterday, but I suppose really the question I was leading into before the line started to break up on us, so why are the barristers taking part in this protest at the Criminal Courts of Justice?
Well, I suppose it really comes down to the fact that there's such a huge strain at the minute on the criminal justice system. And part of that, from our point of view, is the 40% and over 40% cuts in real terms since 2002 to the fees paid to prosecution barristers and to defence barristers. And I suppose I had given a brief history, I suppose, of how they came about between the FEMPI cuts in 2009-2010 and then the further 10% cut that was only to the barristers' pay in 2011. And the reason we're, I suppose, at this impasse now is that there's been engagement or the Bar Council have been trying to engage with government on the issue of restoration of those fees since 2016. And even as far back as July of 2018, there was a review conducted by both the Director of Public Prosecutions and the Department of Justice on the issue of pay restoration for barristers. And that review group found, and they were in unequivocal agreement, that there was ongoing flexibility being delivered by barristers, which was considered comparable to the flexibility delivered by other groups to justify the reversing of cuts. So in their view, the view of the DPP and the Department of Justice in July of 2018, the issue of restoration was concluded from their point of view, and restoration should occur of those fees. And even in 2021, the DPP reiterated that, I suppose, as a first step, the link between the public sector pay and the barristers' fees should be restored. That obviously having been broken back in 2008. Mm-hmm. So really, I suppose, since 2018, there's been no meaningful reason given as to why that the findings and the recommendations of that review group haven't progressed any further.
Okay, you found
why we're at this stage.
Yeah, and I want to make sure everyone really understands the issue we're talking sure. about. So, what would the typical roles of barristers be in withdrawing these services, and who's actually paying them, and is it a flat fee, or because you know yourself the narrative out there is that it's the legal profession that's making the money all the time, be it through insurance or whatever. So when we talk about barristers, what work are they typically doing, and who is paying them?
Well, to be very clear, first of all, we're talking about barristers who are working in criminal law as opposed to civil law. Mm-hmm. And certainly when there's talk of the massive fees and insurance and all that kind of stuff, that would be considered civil law. In terms of criminal law, there are barristers who work and who are briefed by the state, by the Director of Public Prosecutions, to prosecute crime. And what we're dealing with is serious crimes. So those crimes that are prosecuted in the indictable courts, in the circuit court and the central criminal court and the special criminal court. And the prosecution barristers are paid by the Director of Public Prosecutions on a case-by-case basis, because all barristers are self-employed. And then barristers who appear on behalf of accused people, so persons who are accused of very serious crime, they are paid generally through the Criminal Legal Aid Scheme, and that's the Department of Justice would have remit over that. So both parties who essentially pay barristers for all this work in criminal law were involved in that review group back in 2018. And because it's a case-by-case basis, the payment is also case-by-case. So for example, just to give you a sample of the fees that we're talking about, for an ordinary circuit court case for a junior counsel like myself, the case fee or what's called the brief fee is €1,144, and that fee includes the first day of the trial. It includes all the preparatory work that leads up to that point. It involves reading the book of evidence, which can be anything from only 30 or 40 pages to hundreds of pages. It can then involve hundreds of pages of disclosure. And bear in mind also, Greg, we're in a very different place now in 2023 compared to 2002, you know, in terms of the digital era and the evidence that can be put before a court. So, for example, smartphones, they produce thousands of pages sometimes of analysis. And there's a huge amount more of CCTV, for example, that needs to be presented as well. So these are complex factors that are in play today that weren't in play in 2002.
All right, Aoife, that actually makes it all really clear. So thank you very much for that. I mean, obviously, there was a protest at the Criminal Courts of Justice on Tuesday. But the next step, presumably, is a withdrawal of services, which would be obviously very impactful on the workings of the court more generally. How far are we away from that type of action?
Well, I suppose we are at an impasse, and it was with great reluctance that the Bar Council recommended to its members to withdraw services on the 3rd of October of this year. But I suppose notice has been given that that is the intention, and notice was given on the 12th of July, just last week or 2 weeks ago nearly. And I suppose it's all the relevant parties, you know, the court services, the judiciary and so on, have all been given notice.
Okay, that landline has now...
Here.
Okay, sorry, the line... Aoife, it probably was an RN, but the line dropped briefly there, believe it or not. I think they don't want us to talk about it, Aoife. It's, maybe it's the Matrix.
Clearly.
Sorry, you were going to say, though, about... you were going to say about we're at the impasse and we're talking about October. So just finish that point, Aoife, if you don't mind.
Yeah, so at the minute, the 3rd of October is when there will be a withdrawal of services. Obviously, it's hopeful that maybe there may be engagement in advance of that. Everyone has been given notice, you know, the judiciary and court services and so on has been given notice to try and minimise the impact on all court users for the 3rd of October. But that's the intention as of now.
And finally, Aoife, with the best will in the world from the likes of yourself and other colleagues, is there an issue here too, though, in terms of the legal representation that people are entitled to or deserve, that people are stretched, you know, or overworked, and that also is an element of this?
Well, obviously, that you know, the big picture here and the main problem is that the whole criminal justice system is under a strain, and you know, obviously, from our perspective, there with COVID in particular, there has been an additional strain, you know, with trying to reduce the court lists and the wait time for trials to get on. But there's obviously other problems impacting on the criminal justice system, apart from the fees for barristers. But this is certainly part of it, and it's certainly a huge problem at the minute. And obviously we're also losing barristers who, you know, are good barristers who start out in criminal law, but the stats are that after 6 years, 2/3 of those are leaving criminal law for other areas.
Yeah. Okay, that is a problem. Aoife, thanks for that. I really appreciate it. That's Aoife McNichol, who's a barrister who's from originally outside Gortahawk there. Hi all in Highland Radio. I would love if you could play a special request today for Sinead Black, Mum and Dad, on their 50th anniversary, celebrating all weekend. Maybe you could play for them Dance With You Annie or Love Me When I'm Old. Okay, that comes in from Special Friends in County Meath, I believe, if I'm reading that correctly. Okay, well, we won't get to play that, but it certainly might get played out over the course of the day. Right, back with more shortly. Now, we're joined on the programme by Sandy Kelly. Good morning, Sandy. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hello. Oh, hello. How are you today?
Good. And it's great to have you on the show. How are you keeping, Sandy?
Keeping great. Busy at the minute, which is fantastic.
Yeah, very busy, because you've just recorded your first solo album in 30 years, 3 decades. What's taken so long?
Oh, my God. I can't believe it myself. Mm. Well, initially, what happened, I had some huge legal issues in America with my American manager going back into the early 90s, and which ended up in court, and that went on for quite a while, and it, as you can imagine, it was very, you know, stressful and traumatic. And at the end of all of that, I kind of lost the want anything again like that. And my last album actually was the one I did with, it was Kelly's Heroes. It was the one I did with Johnny Cash and Willie Nelson, Glenn Campbell and people like that. And so I decided just not to do it. And then my son, about 4 years ago, encouraged me to go back into the studio and to record some new material. So that's what happened.
And you decided to do this at the same time as writing your biography, which you decided to do in arguably quite a time-consuming fashion, Sandy.
Yeah, I sat at the table and wrote it like an essay by hand. It was very time-consuming. It took me 3 years to write it, because, you know, the way you'd write a little bit and then you'd go away from it and then you'd come back to it. And, you know, so some of it is quite funny and humorous, but a lot of it was, for me, was very emotional and hard to write, you know, as you can imagine. But my son's idea to do a project which would involve writing my autobiography and to record the album. Songs on the album reflect some of the stories in the book, so they're kind of connected.
And was it a difficult process or a beneficial process writing everything down? That's what we're told to do, you know, if we want to help deal with things. But I mean, obviously, there's a balance with facing stuff that we've probably compartmentalized for, you know, to our own benefit, or facing up to it. I mean, I know you said it was difficult, but you've come through it as a better person, or has it had a negative impact on you?
Well, you know what you've said there is exactly true. You know, so many people have said to me, you know, Michael O'Brien, who sadly passed away last year from O'Brien Press, rang me and asked me to write a book. And I'd said no for a long time. And he and other people had said to me, oh, you'll feel so much better when you get it out of your head and onto pages. But as of yet, that hasn't happened.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe in itself, maybe, you know, in writing it and healing and, as you just said, bringing up things, you know, to your mind, to readdressing things and revisiting things and situations in your life that you necessarily don't want to, is very difficult. And as of yet, I don't really feel better.
You haven't had that cathartic experience yet that everyone talks about.
Not yet, but then maybe, you know what I'm thinking, I probably finished my last, you know, bit of the book 2 months ago, and maybe, you know, the healing part of it takes time too, maybe, you know, and it's going to take me a little while, because it's a big thing to commit to writing something like that and to be honest. And from the get-go, I decided to be very honest, because if people are going to, you know, buy the book at all and spend their good money on it, the very least I can do is tell it as it was. So I suppose, in a way, I've had a very colourful life in so far as my background was, you know, fed up roadshow with my family from the age of 3. I was singing and on stage, and that had very humorous parts and all of that. And there's some humour to the book, but also there's some sadness. And I'm sort of in the process, I think, of healing from the sadness.
Yeah, and I think too, Sandy, we forget, we hold people like you, people in the celebrity eye, people who are famous, or people who have had an amazing experiences like you have had throughout your old careers, if you're, you know, not a human as such, you know. And I think when we sit down and reflect on our lives, yes, there's some amazing things, but life is tough too. And sometimes, even if it's 90% positive, that 10% of negativity can be enough to sour it for us. Do you allow yourself to sort of reflect on your career as a whole, and do you see it as overall a positive experience so far?
Yeah, you know what you've said there is so true. You know, I think people sometimes think when, you know, we're supposed to. I was brought up to be an entertainer from, as I just said, a very early age. And, you know, people sort of see you on the stage and your sequence, and you're supposed to present yourself in a very positive way and entertain people. I've never, I don't even think one time, put my foot on the stage and brought anything negative with me or shared anything I might have been going through in that moment, because that's not my job. But the reality, as you've just said, is that, you know, we're all exactly the same. And, you know, we all go through the same things. You know, I might be on the stage one night and then the next morning I'm back at home washing the dishes and cooking and, you know, going through the very same, you know, heartbreak and, mm. and losses that everybody else is. But you just don't bring that to work so people don't see it.
Mm-hmm.
So I suppose in the book, I brought it to the words and explained exactly, you know, my mum became ill at a very early age and we lost her at an early age. Then I went on 2 years later to have a daughter with special needs that a lot of people would know about. And then in more recent times, 5 years ago, I lost my sister tragically. So, you know, there's a lot of things like that, but you have to keep going.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
You have to keep going and doing
and as
what
well
you,
too,
you know,
I mean, you're born into a family of entertainers, performing from a young age as well. And mm-hmm. by the way, there's lots of positives and we'll focus on that as well. But I think it's worth people realizing that it's not always rosy. But I mean, like in terms of normality, it's probably was difficult for you to have a normal childhood, normal teenage years, normal relationships with all the travel and performing and trying to split your attention between your art and the people around you. You know, I'd imagine it's really rewarding, but again, you know, like a challenging lifestyle. And it started really, really young for you.
I suppose, though, you know, I didn't realise that then, because if you're born into, you know, I was born into that family and into an entertainment family, and that was our lives.
Mm.
And so I didn't realise that it wasn't normal, you know,
yeah,
a normal
yeah, yeah.
life. It was just the way it was for us. And you just sort of went with that. And looking back on it, I know that it was a difficult life now looking back, and I know it was very different. And we certainly weren't very well off. You ate well on the nights that a lot of people came to see the show, and they didn't always pay with money. Sometimes if a family didn't have money, my grandfather on the door, as I stood beside him, he would accept food, you know, he would accept eggs or, you know, vegetables or whatever, you know. In Achill, I remember an abundance of fish. I've never cared for fish that much since because we stayed there for 3 weeks. We seemed to be having fish for breakfast, dinner and supper, you know. Mm. And so to me, it was a very magical life and always full of fun and moving and discovering new things. And I was always in trouble trying to come up with new schemes to make a few bob on the side, even at a very early age. That's a trait I haven't lost, by the way. So, you know, it was magical. And then as I got older, people and other children in particular lived differently than I did.
Mm.
And I would always refer to them as real people. And I remember saying to my mum and dad, you know, will I ever be a real person? And will I ever, meaning, of course, will I ever live in a house? Will I ever be in the same place? Will I ever have friends? You know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I know.
But it didn't have any effect on me, really. You know, would I change it? No, I wouldn't have changed it.
It's remarkable, though, your place in history, not only, you know, your songs that are synonymous with you and how you've entertained people, with the people you've shared the stage with as well, Willie Nelson, Johnny Cash, obviously names that have come to the fore. I mean, that's just... It's a wonderful. It a wonderful thing to be able to reflect back on. And you're going to be taken to the stage with more legends in Donegal in the not too distant future. We'll talk about that. But
yes,
lovely to reflect back on.
It is, and there again, I suppose, as I said, not wanting to write a book, but then in writing the book and in that process, I was forced to go back into my mind and relive how it came about. I met Johnny Cash and Willie Nelson and people like Glen Campbell and all of those amazing people who know, and even some of our Irish people like Big Tom, Brendan Grace, people who are no longer here. And so I was forced to go back and think about all of that. And in doing that and in the process, I realised just how lucky I was. Back then I was so busy you were doing. You were delighted you were doing all these things, but you didn't have time to reflect on it, you know, because I was so busy. Now I can think back and be so grateful for the opportunities that I had and the great people that I met. And in working with people like all of those, you know, great, wonderful entertainers and legends, I learned an awful lot about my craft. So I started learning on the show with my grandfather. But then in later life, I went on to meet these wonderful people and work with them and learn even more about stagecraft. And, you know, watching, standing or sitting beside the stage every night and watching somebody like Johnny Cash go out there and entertain his fans was a huge learning experience.
Yeah.
Because he was, you know, he was a real person that went out there and loved what he did and did it to the best of his ability every single time he put his foot on the stage. No excuses.
And I, as I say, so much positivity, but also too, we get an insight into the difficult space the music industry can be. And it's not historic either. We know, you know, the likes of Rita Ora, contemporary artist, Taylor Swift, what she's been going through of late in dealing with people within the industry. I don't know if it's primarily women that seem to have these issues. I'm sure it's not exclusively women. But we get to learn too about that element of the business as well, Sandy. You know, it's a tough place to operate in as well.
It's a tough place. You know, I think perhaps now, you know, people with, and you are right, it is more difficult for women. But I think in this day and age, you know, there's access to all sorts of information, you know, on the internet and social media and all of that. So it's a little bit easier as an artist to educate yourself as to what the pitfalls may be. But going back to the early days in our industry, that wasn't available to us. So we all fell prey to people who were not nice people in the industry. And, you know, we were busy out there singing and creating music and doing what we do and trusting other people to take care of our business. Mm-hmm. And in doing so, we made a lot of mistakes. And for me, it was awful at the time, but thankfully I feel now that, you know, maybe I was better off in the long run. I had a manager in America, who, huge manager, he's had major artists who signed me as an artist going way, way back. And that ended up being horrible. And he prevented me from working or singing in America for 10 years, which started at the height of my career in America and only ended when he passed away. And those 10 years brought me to an age where, you know, my family became the most important thing to me, and all of that didn't seem that important.
Yeah.
So I didn't pursue it after that. But so I don't mourn the loss of a career that I might have had in America, but I do still feel I still do have the wounds of what I went through in court and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's tough. Before we talk about the gig, is the book out, or when's it out?
Well, the album it will be out in October. It was co-produced by my son William and Johnny Cash's son and June Carter's son, John Carter Cash, and we did it at Johnny Cash's studio in Nashville, which was wonderful to revisit. And the book is now finished and gone to print. So the album comes out on the 8th of October, which coincidentally would have been my sister's birthday. And then on the 6th, the book will come out from O'Brien Press. Wow. So they both come out together. They're kind of sort of one project, if you like. So I'm delighted with the album, and I can't wait for people to finally hear new music. Woodcarver has been redone with keeping my voice and Johnny Cash's voice.
Wow.
And we were all in the studio all at the same time, made 4 visits to Nashville. Mm. So it was lovely to be there with the musicians and sing at the same time. And we redid Against the Wind with Willie Nelson. And so there's new versions of those. So I'm excited for everybody to hear that.
Exactly. And a bit nervous about the book?
I was just going to say I'm nervous.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's a natural, real feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, when I posted the final draft, which looked like the Bible because I'd written in my handwriting, when I posted it off, I just thought, oh my God, it's gone now, you know. Yeah. I can't get it back.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I hope.
Can I say hello to Neely Keeney, who's a very good friend of mine who lives up nearby you, and he took some wonderful photographs of Johnny Cash and I, and they'll be in the book. So Neely's a great friend.
All right. Caller wants to know: are your family related to the Finnegans of Temple Boy in Sligo?
No, not that I know of. I don't think so.
That's the type of random message we get in. So how much are you looking forward to performing with The Conquerors, Ronan Collins and others in the Waterfront Hotel in Dunloe on Wednesday, the 2nd of August?
I am looking forward to it so much that I booked myself a room and I'm staying.
Well, there you go. Brilliant.
Because I have not been to the Mary of Dunloe Festival in years. And so I'm so looking forward to it. I said, you know what? I deserve a treat. So I rang the hotel, booked myself a room, and I'm going to stay over and have a little bit of a wander around the town and stuff like that.
Well, you're in for an absolute treat. There are still a number of tickets available for what's going to be a brilliant
night. It'll be great. Well, Ronan Collins and Brendan Shine is on as well.
Yes.
Like, they're both fantastic entertainers, so it's always great. And I was delighted when Ronan rang me some months ago to invite me to be part of the show. And as I said, I haven't been there in a while, so looking forward to meeting up with some friends.
Yep. Well, listen, everyone's excited for the album coming out. I hope the biography release turns out to be a very positive experience for you, Sandy, and you get that healing in areas of your life that you might need. I hope that's your experience, and it all turns out to be really positive for you.
That's a lovely thing to say, and thank you so much. I appreciate it.
All right, and we're going to listen to your track, How Long Will I Love You? But for now, Sandy, thank you so much, and we look forward to welcoming you back to beautiful Donegal in the not-too-distant future.
Will you be over at the show yourself?
I'm hoping to, Sandy. It's just the type of show I would love to go to, so I'm trying.
Yeah, I'm trying. Well, pop over for a cup of coffee or something.
Lovely,
it would be
Sandy.
Nice. To meet in person.
For sure. Okay, God bless you, Sandy. Thank you very much indeed. Sandy Kelly there. And this is her track now. How long will I love you? Sorry about that. I'm just trying to line it up and talk at the same time.
You and longer if I can.
All right, that is Sandy Kelly, How Long Will I Love You? And I mean this in the most complimentary way possible. There's a wonderful maturity to her voice, which I think it makes the words, to me anyway, to the listener, feel more important and understood. Okay, let's take a break. Back shortly. Morning, Greg. Can you wish my husband, Vincent Kilpatrick, a very happy 22 years anniversary? Can you play our wedding song, Love Me Tender by Elvis Presley? Thank you. I can't on the programme. I might listen to it on the way home, though. It's a beautiful track. Congratulations. Someone a little later on will play that song for you. I am absolutely certain here on Highland Radio. Congratulations to you both. To Marion and Bobby McMenamin from Letterkenny, who are celebrating, wait for it, 50 years of marriage today. Lots of love from sister Evelyn. Half a century of marriage between Marion and Bobby McMenamin. I hope you have a wonderful, wonderful day. A few comments. Yes, offshore wind turbines are bad for the marine environment. We cannot live without healthy oceans. We have to reduce consumption, not destroy the ocean, says a listener. The parents are putting pressure on themselves, paying stupid money for what really only they only have themselves to blame. That's to do with the Taylor Swift concerts. And I understand exactly what you're saying. I do. But I do also understand the pressures of a parent. Hi there. Can you let drivers know that there are black-faced mountain sheep on the N15 Donegal Town to Ballybuffet Road? They're out on the Ballybuffet side of the turn off to Castle Derg. If they could be vigilant around the bends, hopefully the farmer who owns them hears this too and pens them in. This is interesting, Greg, is that if there's any truth in it. An international working group in a report that highlights the importance of Western technology to Vladimir Putin's military has identified Irish parts in Russian weapons used in the invasion of Ukraine. Yeah, indeed, I read that. That's an ongoing investigation. Right, OK. Can we come to that after 11? It's literally 11 o'clock now, if you don't mind. Sorry. We'll come back to that after 11. Hi, Greg. Went to Dublin 2 weeks ago. I was in the city centre. First time in years. I was there up to 10:30 p.m. at night, because we will be talking about that. Up to 10:30 at night. Frightening. My son could not get over the amount of dirt and rubbish and how it compared to other European cities. It doesn't. Indeed, I think they have a serious problem in parts of Dublin, which is the gateway to the rest of Ireland. All right. So it does affect us in terms of visitors and tourism if it gets a bad reputation. Right, okay. Any of your comments that we didn't get to will carry over to Monday, because a lot of the conversations will be continued on Monday. In any case, we appreciate all of your contact, but we're going to slow down a little bit, switch gears. Michael and Fionnuala is going to be joining us shortly, and we're going to chill out, ease our way into the weekend with That's Entertainment.